be seated. There is a story that much of the world doesn't want to hear. It is the story of the high cost of keeping the people of Israel safe. In order to share that story, which is it is incumbent upon each and every one of us to hear, we invite up Shachaf Segel and Amit Gilboa, who are here representing Brothers for Life, Wounded Soldiers in Israel. Shachaf.
Thank you very much for having me. As you heard, my name is Shachaf Segal. I was born and raised in Israel, in a small town named Gan Yavne. You need more? Okay, well. Thank you. A small town named Gan Yavne, southern Israel. So you know we had the odd terror attack, more than the odd rocket or two. And when I grew up, we didn't have Iron Dome, so every rocket that went up also went down and killed and hurt a lot of people. At the age of 15, 16, while most young, you should know, young American Jewish or non-Jewish sit at home and think about what they're going to do in college, where they're going to go, how important is that for their life. In Israel, a 15, 16-year-old sits at home and thinks about maybe the most important 3 years of his life that can have a turn that nobody can know where it's going to take them or lead them. That is going to be the IDF, the 3 years where you're going to serve your country and your people in the army. Usually it's a hard choice for a lot of people. For me, it was very easy. I knew that I have to go to the Golani Brigade. I don't know if you know the Golani Brigade. The Golani Brigade is the number one brigade in number and in actually. I do believe they're the number one. But they're a little bit crazy. They're a little bit, you know, they're mashugana. They're out there. And all of my family, my brother, all of his friends, all my uncles, everybody was in Golani. So I knew one thing. I have to get to the Golani Brigade or else my Shabbat dinner is going to be outside with the dog. And we don't even have a dog. So it's going to be a very, very lonely Shabbat dinner. Sadly, I didn't have the characteristics physical because I had glasses to go to the Golani Brigade. So they offered me a different route. And I very respectfully declined. I got to the Bakum and they told me to get on the bus. Literally my first few hours in the IDF, they said, get on the bus. I said, is that the bus to Golani? They said, no. I respectfully declined and they respectfully sent me to prison. Short 2 weeks after, only 2 weeks in military prison, they understood that I'm crazy enough to go to the Golani Brigade. So they sent me into the Golani Brigade. I arrived there, but I said, my brother was in a special unit. I can't just be in the brigades. I need to be in a special unit. And they said, you're not even supposed to be here, and you want to be in the top elite unit. And I said, I do, and I will. And this time, no prison time, but they allowed me to try. And I succeeded. Short 18 months after, I've made it into the unit. I became a sharpshooter and a combat medic. But then again, as you know, I'm there to protect my people and my family, but rockets have still continued to be fired at my parents' house and my mother, and it felt really, really bad. It didn't feel like I'm defending her. After many, many years, the Israeli government decided to have a stronger reaction to those attacks. That reaction was Operation Kesled, which I had the honor of participating in. When the commander huddled us together and said, that's it, guys, green light, we're going to defend the Jewish people, we're going to defend the Jewish nation. We huddled together, unplanned, hugged one another, and started singing, Am HaNetzach Lo Mefached Miderech Arukah. The forever people is not scared of a long road. It wasn't as good as the songs here, but we did our best. But we got on our gear, entered Gaza, and started basically fighting. My unit is an anti-terror unit. It's the tip of the spear. We walked inside Gaza, the first boots on the ground. Now you need to ask yourself, why do you need anti-terror unit in Sajaya and Jabalia, the two worst neighborhoods in Gaza? The explanation is there's civilians there, Palestinian civilians, that we walked from house to house. We fought terrorists. We killed terrorists. And we evacuated backwards Palestinian civilians. The IDF is the only army on earth that notifies his enemies where he's going to be, sends out pamphlets, gives notifications, tell them where we are going to fight in order for civilians to not be in harm's way. And obviously Hamas is holding there under the wrist, under the gun, to create more death and more chaos. So we were fighting from house to house, fighting terrorists. Very sadly, one of my teammates got injured in the head. We evacuated him backwards and continued fighting, because they also really like to kidnap soldiers and even dead soldiers and body parts. The IDF has devised what's called an iron pair system, which means no matter what, you always have eyes on your partner. My iron pair was my sergeant, Dvir Emanuel Emanuelov. He was an amazing individual. As we were fighting between the houses, Dvir was covering me. As I advanced forward, I heard a burst of fire behind me. I looked backwards and I saw my sergeant lying on the ground. I hoped he was taking cover, but from the way he was laying, I understood that's probably not the situation. I ran to save him. Understand this is in the middle of a battlefield, IEDs, mortars, there's fire all around us. I'm running to save him, and then suddenly I'm lying on the ground. I saw that he was badly injured in the head, but then I was lying on the ground and I didn't understand what happened. It took about a second, and a wave of pain engulfed my left side. I looked at my arm, it was positioned towards one direction, but basically pointed 180 degrees backwards, which you don't have to be the world's best medic, which I was, but you don't have to be the world's best medic to understand that this is not how an arm looks. What happened was they were waiting for the last man in the force, which was my sergeant. They killed him from the terror tunnel. There was a terrorist waiting underneath his feet, waiting for him, shot him in the head, killed him, and tried to kidnap his body. When I ran to save him, a sniper was waiting for me and hit me in the arm. And that's basically where my war story ended, at least on the battlefield. A new war, a type of war started. I needed to rehabilitate myself. The doctors wanted to cut off my arm, and I, maybe a little bit threateningly, convinced them to leave it on and to let me fight for it. And they did. So it took me 5 long years of rehabilitations and surgeries. So many surgeries I can't even remember. But to get it to somewhat of a situation of health, so it's here, it's strong. I'm rock climbing, so that's pretty awesome. But then after 5 years, I've decided that it's enough with the physiotherapy. It's time to rehabilitate other areas of my life, and I needed to go and start studying. Everybody else moved forward, so I should have as well. And like every good Jewish boy, it was or medicine or law. And medicine with the arm couldn't be, so I went to study a law degree. I finished in 4 years my law degree and my MBA at the same time. And I've started working for IMPA, Israel Money Laundering and Terror Financing Prohibition Authority. Half the job was to say that name. but it felt amazing because at 18, I fought soldiers on the battle lines. And at 30, I started taking weapons and money away from terrorists. Then, very sadly, COVID hit, and I always wanted to study abroad, so it was time for me to apply to different universities in the U.S. I've applied to Duke, Georgetown, and Columbia. I got into all three. I've decided to go to Columbia University for my master's in international affairs. Finished that master in May of 2023. Finished my second master's in international affairs in May of 2023. I wanted to go to Colombia because you know how much we're well-loved and well-received, so I thought that's the perfect location for me. And I was supposed to start a position in New York, again, also defending Jewish communities using intelligence, but October 7th hit. And I didn't know how October 8th is going to be, but I knew for a fact it's not going to look like October 6th. I couldn't stay in New York. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I couldn't calm down. I needed to get home. I needed to be with my family, I needed to be with my people, I needed to be in my country. I fought very, very hard to try and find every flight I could to get to Israel, but what's amazing about this country, which is I don't think there's any other nation on earth that does that, with me, 50,000 other individuals tried to come back to a war-torn country. In any other country, planes are leaving in droves. Only in Israel, planes are flying out empty and coming back full of people, trying to defend their country. Very sadly, I couldn't join my teammates, I couldn't join my unit because of the injury, the army wouldn't let me. That doesn't mean I'm sitting idly by. I volunteer with groups, I meet them, I talk with them, I take strength from them and try to give them strength as well. I volunteer as a spokesperson for the Prime Minister's Foreign Desk Office, which takes a lot of time to talk to foreign reporters and explain to them the situation. But more importantly, what is a little point of light for me, something that I can do for the others, and BFL helps me with it a lot. When I studied, BFL gave me scholarship. When I got injured, BFL met me in the hospital. I'm a member of BFL from the second I got injured. In 2009, they met me in the hospital and escorted me all the way to adulthood, to 35 today. Oh, I said the name. I said the number. Thank you. Never mind. I said the number. but BFL escorted me, and today BFL helps me to do something that's very important for me, going and meeting the young wounded soldiers. Very sadly, we have a lot of them, and meeting them in the hospital, seeing how strong they are, giving them a little bit of my knowledge, especially soldiers who got arm injuries like I did. They already run my number amongst themselves, asking me to come and visit them today. So that is amazing to me. That is something that I can give back to the next generation and the people who did it before me. That is basically my story. That is what I'm doing today, and I will continue doing that for Israel. But if you allow me to say one last thing, coming to the U.S., this is the first time I've been to the U.S. since I got October 7th started, and I managed to get to Israel. Coming here, visiting families, visiting communities, being received with an open arm, an open heart, and seeing the love and support you have for Israel gives me the strength to come back to Israel and support my fellow members and my fellow friends and my comrades, and gives us the strength to continue fighting this most just war I've ever seen in my life. So thank you, thank you, thank you very much for having us, and Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Amit.
Oh boy. Hi, my name is Amit. This is Hawaij, my service dog. I serve him meals twice a day. I offer him walking services. And I'm his emotional support human. My name is Amit Gilboa. I was born in Tel Aviv, raised in Netanya. I'm 38, almost 38 years old. I'm a major in reserve. I served in the army at the Armored Corps from 2004 to 2012. And I serve in reserve from 2014 until now. When I drafted the army, I wanted also to be on the Golani Brigade, but when I got to the back room, they said, okay, you're in the Armored Corps, and there's the bus, and I said, okay, and I went up. And when I got to Sayarim, Bet Sefer LeShiryon, they asked me which division and which brigade you want to be, and I said, okay, I want to be on the 401st because that had the Merkava 4 back then, and I wanted to be on the newest tank. And they said, okay, you're going to go to the 7th brigade. They had the oldest tank, and I said, okay. And then they asked me what kind of position you want to be inside a tank crew, and I said, well, I want to be the gunner, the one that shoots the main cannon. And then they said, you're going to be a driver, and I said, okay. So, yeah, and afterwards I fought my way to become a tank commander, and afterwards I fought my way to become an officer, a platoon commander, and then a company commander. During my service, I was in many different and complicated combat situations, but in 2011, in the south area of the Gaza Strip, when I was a company commander, a very specific event started, a chain explosion. During the last part of an operation to detect and neutralize booby traps on the security fence, a 250-pound roadside bomb exploded just next to my tank, and two anti-tank missiles were fired to its direction. Although it was around 8 a.m., everything around us was pitch black. My tank kept operating, but one of my crewmen was injured. I had no comms. I couldn't contact my crew. Other tanks of my company or the battalion commander in charge of the operation. After what seemed like forever, we managed to get back to the Israeli side of the fence, and my crewman was evicted to get treatment in Soroka Hospital. I finally felt that I can breathe again for the first time. The rest of the crew and I went down to assess the damage of the tank. We saw a hole in the side of the tank. The armor managed to stop the copper liner from the bomb. In pure luck, there wasn't a breach. If there was one, it would have hit the ammunition shells inside the tank. The tank's engine also died out. We call it on comms the heart. It seemed like the Merkava Mark II gave everything it had, steel, heart and soul, to protect us, and we were somewhat unharmed. I didn't have much time to waste. I was needed in a different area of the sector. I scrambled a new crew and the tank. I went back into the sector to continue my mission. Later that day, I went to Soroka Hospital for a medical check. I also visited my crewman after he had undergone surgery. I also met with my brigade commander. I wanted to tell him how it felt to be there alone, shrouded in darkness, with no ability to respond. I wanted to tell him I was struggling, but I couldn't do so. Eventually, I was released from the army in 2012, a year later. I was supposed to become a battalion commander myself in a future stage. But something happened, and I couldn't understand what. I was far more quickly agitated. I was overlooking safety precautions in training. I was acting rogue inside the army. After my release, I went to travel around the world, New Zealand, Australia, and Thailand. I came back to Israel to start my studies in the Technion as a civil engineer. When I came back, Amir called me. He was a colonel and the commander of the 10th Brigade. He was also my battalion commander in Kastled back in 2008. He asked if I want to be a company commander in reserve. I asked to be a deputy so I can focus on my studies. We both agreed. During Operation Protective Edge, I was asked by my battalion commander to step up and take charge of the company instead of the current commander. It happened in August 14th, 2014, during Protective Edge. I remember the date exactly as it was my 28th birthday. The ceremony of change of command was held a few kilometers away from where the incident happened in 2011. I served as a company commander in reserve until 2020, just before COVID broke. I finished my position with merit. During my studies at the Technion, I served 50 days a year and managed to finish 2 degrees on time. I managed to complete a second BA in economics and management alongside my BSc in civil engineering while spending almost a full year in reserve out of 4 years of studies. But something was crawling under the surface. Each year, the time between the Holocaust Remembrance Day to the Independence Day became harder and harder. During my service, I have lost a lot of brothers in arms from different stations of my service. Memorial Day would slap that in my face each year alongside my personal story. In 2017, after graduating, I started my career as a civil engineer. I was an associate project manager in Israel's fourth company. It was supposed to be a dream job and a sure step on my way to a successful career. But as I graduated, I felt alone once again. I started suffering from depression. Very soon after, anxiety joined the celebration. I couldn't manage to maintain a healthy relationship with a significant other. I wasn't enjoying the same activities I used to enjoy. Something was amiss. In 2021, 10 years after the incident, I started seeking professional help. In 2023, I was recognized by the Ministry of Defense as a veteran suffering from PTSD. Very short after, I became a brother in Brothers for Life. I wasn't alone in the dark anymore. The Brothers House. The Brothers Housing for Truman became my safe haven, a place I can come to rest and recover, a place I can come after I was triggered and to be accepted. No matter what I'm going through. It's a place in which I don't feel as an outsider. A place I can relax, talk, process while feeling safe and protected. During the past year, I became more involved in Brothers for Life activities. The main one I'm involved with is the Brothers for Life yacht, Carmi. It took me some time to understand why I'm attracted to the yacht. One day, one of the guys asked me to go down a hatch to search for something that we needed. As I popped my head back out back again, it hit me. It felt just like popping my head out of the Merkava tank. So although it is white and not olive brown, and although it floats and won't sink at sea, the yacht became the new tank in my life. Just before Rosh Hashanah, I joined seven other brothers and we sailed from Herzliya to Cyprus aboard the Carmi. That maritime journey became a milestone in my new life. It happened just before October 7th. It happened just before October the 7th. The memories and the bonds that were tied with other brothers on board the Carmi helped me during the last 6 months. Since October the 7th, I had two positions in reserve in the IDF. The first one, the official one, I'm the chief training officer of Torat Chel Shiryon, the department inside the Armored Corps HQ in charge of tactics, strategies, and drills. In this position, I'm responsible to collect all of the information related to operational events. Lessons, as we call them in the army, are generated from those events and are spread within the forces. This is done to make sure that our soldiers won't do the same mistakes again. The second, unofficially, I became an information hub for soldiers or family of soldiers suffering from mental trauma. During the last year, I was very vocal about PTSD and what it means to try and live with that. It was important for me to speak with my former soldiers about the stress of combat trauma as I went south to visit them during the war from time to time. From the time being, I'm the address for five different reserve soldiers showing different stages of stress and anxiety. And when Brothers for Life opened the course training brothers to be guides for sharing and listening circles, I decided to join. Until October the 7th, I was a young brother in Brothers for Life. Since the 7th, all members of Brothers for Life, including me, became older brothers. So for me, the opportunity to give back to Brothers for Life has arrived, to guide a circle where brothers can come, share, and feel protected and understood. Because in Brothers for Life, you learn that your physical or mental injury or handicap isn't the end of life as you knew it. It's just the beginning of a new, wonderful chapter. I would like to add that although you can never heal or fully heal from PTSD, being here and also for the last week and also here has become a significant part of my healing process or acceptance process of what I've been through. And I would like to thank you for your support for me, for Shachaf, and all the other brothers in Brothers for Life and all the other soldiers of the IDF and the people in Israel. It may not seem a lot, but I can't express it in words. Thank you.